WPVM LP in Asheville, North Carolina. 103.7 on your dial and streaming globally at WPVMFM.org.
This is WPVM 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to A Better World on WPVM. My name is McNair Ezard and I'm your host for today's show. Each week on A Better World, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone. And we are fortunate to have with us again today is Robin Lively Summers. She's the president of Indivisible Asheville. Robin was with us back in the first part of March of this year. So, Robin, it's good to have you back and get an update about what's been happening since then. So, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
A lot of water has gone under the bridge since then, I'm sure, in terms of the work that you guys are doing. But first of all, for listeners who might not be familiar with Indivisible Asheville, talk about what it is, how it got started, what it gets involved with, et cetera.
Okay. Indivisible Asheville is a 501c4 progressive organization, nonprofit. We have been in existence since 2017 with the first Trump administration. We came into being because we knew that we were going to have to fight for our democracy and for our way of life and for those people who are marginalized, who were marginalized and now have become even more so with this second regime. We are focused mostly on voting access, engaging in educating and empowering people to participate in civil discourse. Since the January, though, our focus has been more on protests and making sure that our public officials understand that we're not happy with where the country is going.
What's the structure? Do you have paid staff and volunteers, or are you all volunteers?
We are thoroughly all volunteer, yes. So we are a completely volunteer organization. We have a central board of 9 members now. And then we have a readership of our newsletters. We have teams now. Since February, our group has grown exponentially. I keep joking around that I feel like it went from a 5-man operation to a 200-man operation, and I'm trying to write the job descriptions as I go. So we are we're very busy right now, but it is all volunteers.
Talk to me about the relationship that the local Indivisible Asheville office has with the national office of Indivisible.
So Indivisible National is an organization that was created, or it was started back with the first Trump administration by a group of former Obama aides who had seen the takeover of the Republican Party by the Tea Party and the extremists, the right extremists, and the methods that they used to gain that power. And they said, well, we can do that. And so they, after the election of Trump, said, well, we need to do something. And so they basically just took the tactics and turned it into a guide, which they published as an open Google Doc, the Indivisible Guide. And it was just how to organize at the grassroots, because they understood that the big national organizations were not going to be able to do the work that needed to be done because it was too bureaucratic, it was too centrist, it was not going to focus on the immediate needs of the local. And so they published this guide and it took off like wildfire. And the organization has since grown. And it is mostly a hub to support and inform the local grassroots organization. So Indivisible groups such as ours are affiliated. Well, not all of them are affiliated, but most of them are affiliated with National. But National doesn't tell us what to do. National will say, hey, we've got these toolkits for if you're going to plan a rally or a protest. We have these grants that you can write if you're doing things. We have these tools to help you recruit and maintain your volunteers. And so every local Indivisible group is structured very differently. Some of them are just literally five people that work together to put on small protests and try to keep the public informed. Our group has evolved into something a little more complex than that. Like I said, we have a central board, and then from that we have a Congress team, a state watch team, we have an events team now, we have a communications team, we have a healthcare team, and we're still working on that immigration piece. It's near and dear to our hearts, but we just haven't made inroads in that one yet. So that's a near and dear. We are working on a group of people that are, it's basically a protest preparedness group, so that people can protest safely. And we have finances, we have grant money and donations, we have a website, we have a newsletter, we have our media group is just amazing at being able to get out action alerts and or press releases. So we have a more complicated presence than a lot of the other groups, especially the new groups. So
how many groups are there now?
Oh, gosh, that's a really good question. Yeah. Well, I would have told you that there was more than 1,000 across the country, but that was before January. And I know that the number of groups has exploded. And I can't say to the exact number of explosions, but I can tell you that as an established group that had been getting a regular influx of money from national, because we knew how to apply for the various grants for whether we were doing recruitment or whether we were doing events, they came to us and said, we can't give you any more money because you're good at it and we need to support all of these new groups. Mm-hmm. So it's a boon, and I'm very happy for all of them, but it was kind of like, oh, great, now I got to figure out how to fundraise. So that's a new hat I have.
Were you able to attend Bernie Sanders' Fighting Oligarchy speech in Asheville?
I was not. I saw him when he came through previously when it was when he was running for president or for the Democratic nomination. I was not able to see it this time. There's a lot of moving parts in my life right now. So it was like, I was really sad about that because he's a great speaker. I mean, I don't think he should be president. He's too old, but man, I wish we could clone him and put him into a younger body because I love his ideas. And I think that we could use a little socialism right now.
So let's talk for a moment and we'll come back to it again near the end of our time together. Tell me about the event in Pack Square coming up on September 1st, what it is, what's the theme of it, and so on.
Well, because it's Labor Day, the theme is unions and labor. How do we support the various unions and workers that are being targeted by the Trump administration? Workers' rights are being compromised. The union of federal employees is just chock-a-block full of lawsuits right now because of all the illegal firings. And the oligarchy, as Bernie likes to use, has been for years undermining the unions and the whole concept of collective bargaining. This North Carolina is one. It's a right to work state, which is a misnomer because, you know, you say you have the right to work means that you have the right to be vulnerable and exposed to the corporate greed that keeps you in jobs that don't pay a living wage. So it really just revolves around those concepts of holding corporations to task for their misuse of their workforce. And that's the American people. And it's just time for the U.S. government to recognize that the only way you can contain greed is through regulation. And instead, this administration is removing regulations and just endangering and making more vulnerable the very people who made them rich. So that's going to be the focus of it. It's going to be a simple affair because we have another event coming up later on, which we're working on. I want to say it's going to be the 21st because we're working with other coalitions and we want to make sure that we're all solidly together. So I'm not going to give you the exact date, but it's later on in September. So this one we kind of pulled together pretty quickly. It's going to be a march with a few speakers. We're hoping that people come out just to walk through the town and make a show so that people recognize that, you know, we are paying attention. We're not happy.
I mean, this is a national thing on September 1st, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a national one, which is why we're learning as we go along. When it comes to the national thing, simpler is better, because on the No Kings Day event, we had all these things planned. And it was like we were completely overwhelmed by the number of people that showed up. And it was just kind of like, okay, never mind, never mind. Scrap all this. We're just marching and we're, you know, rallying and we're chanting and we're making sure that everybody who shows up is feeling like they're participating in something. So it was just kind of like, okay, with these really expected big events, we need to pare it down and keep it as simple as possible, because like I said, we're all volunteer, you know, we're scrabbling for the money and the funds, and we don't need to have tables and events and we had, you know, busters over here and tabling over there and all this other stuff, and people were just like, they never ever saw it because they couldn't get there. So we're trying to keep this one simple.
So it'd be at Pack Square and there's speakers and then there is a march through downtown?
Correct.
Okay. What time?
Our event is at 10:30 a.m.
Now, there have been some other national protests since the beginning of this year, and you mentioned about No Kings Day. How successful was that event? And did you learn anything from like, for instance, No Kings Day that, well, you mentioned about being too complicated. Anything else that you learned that would help you shape future events?
We're learning a lot every time. No Kings was a place where we had created all this sort of community event kind of thing, and we were completely overwhelmed with that. With like, I think they had 7,000 people, and that's being conservative. Like we had estimates of up to 11,000 people, but we try to keep it down because we know that the press is going to record it as less than that. So we kind of hold on. No, it was 7,000. We had another event after that, that event, which ended up, the John Lewis Day event, which again, we kind of prepared for a big rally and we didn't, I mean, we had a lot of people, there was multiple thousands, but it wasn't the like wall of people that we saw at the No Kings. But what we learned from that is that we did have to like gauge how much national attention was being played out and how much national noise. Because I had noticed with the John Lewis thing, I wasn't hearing it on Facebook or any of those other places that we heard the No Kings event being pushed. So it's just sort of like learning how to determine, guess how many people we're going to have. And by that, then we decide how complicated and how long. If it's going to be a huge thing, we can't have people sitting out in the sun for 2 hours listening to speakers. But if it's a smaller event where people are going to be able to access shade and there's space between everybody, you know, then we can look at maybe getting more information. Another thing that we're really learning and wanting to focus on is instead of just having experts be our speaker, finding people that have stories to tell. Those are more powerful and they bring about more responses from the audience. And I think thirdly, and this is definitely something that's brought about some growing pains, is recognizing how we can make this coalition, this tent, be as big and as wide and still cohesive. Because that is key to us actually making this a successful resistance, is that we need everybody standing together. And even though we may have differences of opinions, depending on where you are on the spectrum, you know, you voted for Trump, but you don't like what he's doing. You're, you know, a radical socialist or a communist. You know, we all have to be under this tent and we all have to work together and we all have to provide each other that grace that allows us to recognize that we have a common problem, and that's to get our democracy is in danger, and that we want it not just back, but we want it better.
That's Robin Lively Summers. She's our guest today on A Better World. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're also streaming live at WPVMFM.org. It's not the waking, it's the rise. It's not the shade, we should be past it. It's the light and it's the obstacle that casts it. It's the heat that drives the light, it's the fire it ignites. It's not the waking, it's the rising. It's not the song, it is the singing. Okay, that's Nina Cried Power by Hozier with Mavis Staples. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. So, Robin, if Indivisible Asheville was formed after Donald Trump was elected in 2016, kind of as a sort of response to that occurrence, that event, what was the response after the 2024 election?
I think that there was a lot of just sadness, a lot of sadness. We had worked super hard to get out the vote. Like I said, we were more focused on voter engagement and education. We had done so many canvases and so many tabling events that we actually had finished Asheville proper and had started going out into communities like Fairview and other places that were way out in the boonies, because there are left-leaning voters out there who are never canvassed. They're never asked about their opinions or do they know what their voter, you know, how their voter registration access is and all that kind of stuff. So we were super proud of all the hard work that we had done. And then in that last push, Helene hit, and it just, we had to switch gears and just make it all about trying to get out, staying on top of and getting out the information for all of the changes to the election day. And for all that hard work, we were super, super proud of all of that effect that I feel we had on Buncombe County's amazing turnout and Buncombe County's amazing shift to the left. We moved it 6 points. And when I say we, I mean everybody that did the work. So it was the Democrats, it was even the Republicans, they did try, not as much as we were, because I think we were a little hysterical about it, but there was efforts there. There was the American Civil Liberties Union. There was the Sierra Club. There was all the people that have participated in voter engagement. All of us were out there trying to make sure that anybody who wanted to vote could vote. Then to have that go so sideways and watching the rest of the country shift to the right, I feel like, I think we were all just felt betrayed a little bit and depressed. And it's like, you know, this, oh God, the fight didn't just get, it didn't not continue. It just got really hard. Because we knew that the Project 2025, you don't make a blueprint unless you're going to use it, as Mr. Tim Walz would say in his speeches. You don't make a playbook and not use it. So we knew that that was coming. I think that originally, like from November until January, it was just a period of mourning. Like none of us had the emotional strength, rather, to really do anything. And so, you know, people were like, "Where is everybody? What are you gonna? Why isn't anybody doing anything?" It's like, because we're tired and we're sad, and we needed to kind of regroup.
Yeah, I think I think it was kind of a, for me, and I'm guilty of it too. It was kind of apathy set in. I think it was, like you're saying, an honest reaction. Everybody was just kind of burnt out and tired.
And sad. And like I said, I can't help but feel a little bit betrayed by it. Was just like, after all that work and you guys really picked him again, you don't remember what it was like before. You just can't vote for a woman. You know, what, why? That was why. But then January came and the fire hose opened up and we all went, oh yeah, okay, fine. Put on some lipstick. Let's go. So we, just pulled up our big girl panties and started going, okay, what do we need to do? And that's when we started getting mobilized.
I know for me, it's easy to point the finger at one person and say, he's to blame for all the problems we have right now. But, you know, he wouldn't be able to do what he does if he didn't have a lot of acolytes who carry out his wishes or at least believe in what he's saying and doing. And on the other side, there's a large percentage of people who have just lazily gone along thinking that somehow it would all work out, that democracy would win and we'd all live happily ever after. And now it seems a lot of people are waking up to the dangers of injustice and racism and to the real threats to democracy. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, I completely agree with you. I mean, Donald Trump is not the healthiest person in the world. And if he keeled over, we'd still be in the same boat that we're in. He's not it. Be honest with you. He's more than previous Republican presidents. I almost feel he's more puppety. He just comes off as being this strong man. So he's the perfect front man for this movement that is focused on taking all the power and destroying our country to exploit for their own gain. He's not it, you know, as much as I detest the man and think him reprehensible, it doesn't change the fact that if he were to disappear today, we would still have the same problems that we have. Somebody else would pick up the mantle and be maybe sneakier about it. But at this point, they can't hide their intentions. It's cruelty for cruelty's sake. And they're scapegoating the immigrants and they're scapegoating the trans people. And they're going to come after the gays next, and then they're going to come after the leftists. So, you know, just get in line. Where are you in the line of who they're going to go after and how much are they going to exploit until there's nothing left and they can move to Venezuela or, you know, wherever they're going to go? This is going to fall. I mean, there is no place in history where this goes on forever. It eventually falls. It's just, I'd like to be in my lifetime.
Last time you were on the show, I asked you about what you saw as the serious threats from Donald Trump that time around, and there's been more time has passed, and as far as Indivisible is concerned and the work you do, what do you see now as the serious threats coming from this person?
I don't quite remember what I said last time, but I'd have to say that to me the biggest threat right now is the gerrymandering, the threats to our election processes, because, you know, the courts are not saving us. I mean, the lower courts are doing their job, but the Supreme Court is firmly in the Project 2025's pocket. So I don't know is when it gets up to the Supreme Court, if it's not going to fall, or at least not go in a direction that's going to actually shore up any of our institutions. The more these corporations cave, I think the churches are standing up, but it really does come down to whether or not I think we're going to have a 2026 election. I'm very concerned about the 2028 election. I don't know if we're going to be able to, if there is one, if it's not going to be so rigged and so compromised by these voting, the SAVE Act and the gerrymandering. You know, unless more left-wing states start going, well, if you're going to do it, you know, I don't know. It's the elections. The short answer is it's the elections.
Well, I saw on the Indivisible website that one of the actions that you're involved in has to do with the North Carolina legislature seeking to change election laws. Can you talk about more specifically what that is and the current status of that?
Well, right now we are... Well, we're doing a couple of things. We are reaching out to our local legislators in getting them in to small groups, small group discussions, so that we can understand and recognize how we can be supportive. Like, what is going to help you? If they're Democrats, if they're Republicans, they're not agreeing to meet with us. We are looking at meeting with our federal representatives. And again, we have a lot of avoidance. And you know, we were trying to see Chuck Edwards during the August recess, and oh, no, no, no. And it's like, it's funny, you're not doing any town halls. You're not sending your little van out to any of your satellite offices. You're not engaging with us at all. And this is what you're supposed to be doing. And I believe we have an appointment in October.
Is the October meeting with Chuck Edwards?
Supposedly. He had been pretty good about, if not... I've actually never spoken personally with him, but I've spoken with his aides a lot. And he was always, whenever we had an action outside of his office, he was always very good about sending somebody out and, you know, listening to our concerns and thanking us for our time and then doing exactly what we said we didn't want him to do. So, you know, I get a lot of letters from him. I don't know about you, but, you know, saying, thank you for your concern about this matter. I'm very proud of blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, well, you're lying. Yeah. You know, I don't know if you believe what you're lying about, but you're still not telling the truth.
What about with Senator Tillis? Have you guys made any inroads with him? At least he, for a moment, stood up to the powers that be.
He's kind of gone AWOL, too. We haven't been able to get much of a response other than the letters and the email responses. We're not getting any face-to-face, you know, and I keep telling everybody, well, I know he's got that whiteboard that keeps tally of every time somebody calls and says no, or, you know, yes, depending on which way you're going. So, you know, keep doing that, because that's our only communication with him right now, which is sad, because he's our representative. He's, you know, our senator. He's supposed to take care of us.
I can't help but wonder if, it's pretty obvious Republican members of Congress they just want to, you know, stay on the good side of the president. And I don't know how you get around that without having an election and voting someone else into office.
That's why they're trying to rig the election, because they've got everybody kowtowed into doing it the way the people behind the leaders of the Republican Party have got them where they want them, and they're getting everybody to bend the knee, and they want to keep those people in power. They don't want other people. Part of me is like, if they could start primarying all of these, I don't know. There's just part of me that wishes they would just grow a spine and recognize that they're public servants. Mm-hmm. It's not a job. It's an honor. It's a service. And instead of treating it like a have to do whatever it is to keep that, you look at it that you have a duty to constituents, and that's who you should be focusing on, whether or not the president is going to primary you. Because I mean, every time they primary somebody and they get their wackadoodle in, they lose. So go for it. I don't have a problem with that, but I know Tillis didn't want to lose his job. Now he's got to go be a consultant and make billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Poor man.
But it isn't only the president and those immediately around him that have these ideas that groups and politicians like Tillis and Edwards, you know, adhere to. There's also the state legislatures and the heads of big corporations. How do you go about working or trying to outreach to those sorts of people?
We don't. We don't have that kind of reach. That's, you know, a corporation like Apple or Shell or Duke Energy, you know, those people are going to be listening to maybe the state legislatures, but definitely the feds. And Indivisible is all about the grassroots. We are working with the people, so that the people we have influence over know how to vote and get their voice across, that we provide them access to ways of expressing to their local legislators and their federal legislators. I mean, if they're good, they'll listen. They'll understand that they can't vote for things that all of their constituents are saying, please don't do this. if you have a legislator that is going, well, I know you guys don't want us to cut Medicare, but we're going to do it anyway because it's going to give these billionaires their tax break because that's who's paying my my campaign fund. You know, that's where we have to vote those guys out. But that starts at the local level, and that's where our power is. So while I worry about those things, you know, why is Duke Energy involved in the green move to solar or a green energy commission? I just heard this on the news. There's some commission that is being formed by Josh Stein to look at how to move North Carolina to a more green economy and green power source. And Duke Energy's on this committee. And I'm like, how does that make sense? So, yeah, I mean, maybe they need a seat at the table because that's where still most of our energy comes from. But I just, it's like, that's not where they need to be. They need to be in the back going, oh, please don't cut, you know, please don't regulate us too much. We need to make money. But, you know, it's getting people that would be on that board or be the ones to appoint that board that would say no. And that's who we're looking for is those guys.
You're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And our guest today is Robin Lively Summers, president of Indivisible Asheville. And we'll be back with Robin in just a few minutes after this break.
I went up to the mountain because you me too. Up over the clouds to where the sky was blue, I could see all around me everywhere. I could see all around me, everywhere. Sometimes I feel like I never had nothing but time. Sometimes I lay down, no more can I do. Then I go on again because you asked me to. Some days I look down. The peaceful valley just over the mountain. The peaceful
Okay, that's Patty Griffin singing Up to the Mountain from the album Children Running Through. And our guest today is Robin Lively Summers, president of Indivisible Asheville. She's a repeat guest and friend of the show, and we're kind of getting an update on their latest work in terms of current president, current political climate, and what's going on with the upcoming protests. Robin, I wanted to talk to you about some of the other actions that Indivisible Asheville has been involved with and is involved with. And if I could, the first one I wanted to ask you about is something called, I think it was in May of this year, and it related to a bill in the North Carolina House titled Promoting Wholesome Content for Students. What's that about, and what's the status at the present time?
I'm not sure of the exact status of that, only because Mr. Berger, who is the House Speaker, will not bring a bill to the floor unless he knows it's going to pass. So I always tell people, if you see a bill on the docket for the House, that means it's going to pass. Now, whether that's good or bad, and it's 9 times out of 10, it's bad when it's Mr. Berger who's the Speaker. That's like the best way to know whether or not a bill is going to pass. Now, it still maybe has to go back to the Senate, or maybe has to go to the Senate. Is always the next question I get asked. But the last I knew, this bill basically allows parents to opt out of and gives them access to curriculum content and allows them to opt their students out of it, and allows the parents to have really an inordinate amount of say in what's going to be taught in a classroom. And that means that somebody who has a high school education can decide that some book that they've never even read can be banned from their student's classroom. Because for the most part, it says, well, it's just for that student. It's like, well, okay, what am I supposed to do with that student when I'm reading this book? And the number and the list of books that are being banned, it's growing, and it's scary, and it's stupid. Just absolutely stupid. That a parent can have that kind of control over a curriculum that's developed by people who were, you know, have doctorates in that skill of curriculum design. And it's taking the power away from the schools and from the teachers who are the experts, how to teach and what to teach, and to the purpose of public education is to prepare students to be citizens of the United States, and to allow their hands to be tied is intolerable. I don't think it has passed yet. My latest understanding is that it hasn't. And a lot of that is just because the federal government is moving so fast to dismantle. I don't know. They go back and forth between dismantling the Department of Education and then also putting in all of these rules and everything that the schools have to follow if they're going to receive any federal funding. So they're cutting the funding, and they're also hindering what funding they can get. And I think the legislators are kind of going, well, let's see where the dust settles, and then we'll see how much more we have to curtail. I don't envy anybody in public education right now.
No, not at all.
Of which I am. I'm one. But, you know, there we are.
Are you involved on the local level at all with, I recently read about the local city council that they're considering something having to do with the advisory boards that work with the city council. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard it on the news, but because of our status, we're not supposed to coordinate with any party or candidate. And so that tends to limit how we engage with the city council and or the mayor's office or any of those things, because we have to differentiate between, are you a candidate or are you a leader? And so we tend to keep a little bit of a distance and just follow what's going on in the news. I've heard of the advisory boards. And again, the more people at the table, I think is better, that they would listen to the advisory boards, and that the advisory boards are made up of people that actually have a stake in whatever it is they're advising is the question. And I know that this is right now just a proposal, and they haven't actually created them. So it's a sort of like, let's wait and see who's on them and then determine whether this is a possible benefit or I right now still feel like Asheville and Buncombe County are not as influenced by federal trends. There's still some people that have backbones. I think there's a lot of, like, we have that grace of having time to see where things are going and how hard do we have to fight against what's happening. But ICE is in Asheville now, so I have a feeling that people are going to have to start either growing a spine or capitulating. And when that happens, we'll make our determination of what we're going to do about it.
I was going to ask you about that, about the national site has a lot of information related to ICE and immigrants. And you mentioned earlier in the show that the immigration is an issue that Indivisible Asheville is working on. Talk a little bit more, if you can. I mean, if ICE is in Asheville, what do you see Indivisible Asheville coming up as a way to approach that?
Again, yeah, this is something that we're struggling with, and we're trying very hard to not just be allies, but actually advocates. And now that ICE is turning up in Asheville and starting to affect our community, I see us getting more involved with it, training people on how to engage to protect people that maybe are being harassed and or are being detained unwillingly, unlawfully. Like, knowing that everyone knows their rights. So you don't have to open the door. Businesses can put signs in the door that says, you're not allowed in here. If you're ICE, do not come in here. You're not allowed. We refuse to protect the workers that they have inside because they're not discriminating. They don't have warrants. They don't know exactly who they're coming for. They're just coming after anybody that's brown and trying to sort them out later. At least that's what I've seen in the big cities. It's not a targeted surgical approach. It is that typical, move fast and break things way that the Trump administration does things. So that had just started as a conversation. It's like, we need to step up our game in that area, you know, and I feel bad that it hasn't been able to be something that we targeted more, but we kind of had this sort of sense of, but this is Asheville, we're still okay. And it's like, oh yeah, guess what? We're not okay. All right, we're not okay. Let's like, okay, everybody, let's pay attention. So that's something that is actually on the agenda for the next board meeting. It's like, okay, what are we going to do about this? We're developing a statement about Palestine because we feel like we need to be in solidarity for that, and also to protect both our Muslim community members and our Jewish community members. It's just a matter of trying to advocate and ally ourselves with the people that are being targeted. And it's just a lot of people are being targeted. So it's kind of, it's a lot for a volunteer organization. We're thinking very hard about how we're going to deal with the fact that this federal assault is coming to our neighborhood.
So are there any other issues you see coming up in North Carolina and Western North Carolina that Indivisible Asheville has to be involved with?
We are definitely looking at voting access and voting rights. The SAVE Act is still on the table, which is going to make it difficult for people who can't prove with a birth certificate that they are who they are, that they are an American citizen. I mean, I find it interesting that on my birth certificate, it has one of my names. And this was the only time I ever considered, you know, changing my name, but I kept my maiden name in my name. And so I have a birth certificate. I can prove it, but my daughter can't. She changed her name when she got married, and she's, you know, bless her heart, has no idea where her birth certificate is. So, I mean, I would have to, or someone would have to help her get her birth certificate so that she can prove who she is. And, you know, and I'm not beyond the concept that they would negate everybody's voter registration and say, well, you got to vote, you got to register again and prove who you are, you know, just to eliminate all of the people. And that's going to eliminate women and minorities and people who are, you know, who are poor, and anybody that's any combination of that. So to me, that is We can't fight this if we don't have people in the government who are willing to fight. And that's like a big thing for me, for Indivisible, not just me.
That's Robin Lively Summers. She's our guest today, and she is the president of Indivisible Asheville. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're also streaming at WPVMFM.org. Okay, that's Tears for Fears singing Everybody Wants to Rule the World from the album Songs from the Big Chair. So, Robin, let me ask you, if someone wants to get involved with Indivisible Asheville, what can they do?
I so appreciate that. It's super, super easy. You go to indivisibleavl.org, and that is our website address, and it can... And right there, you can sign up for our newsletter. You'll get that biweekly. You might get an every other week action alert giving you information about little things that you can do, or reminders about our big events coming up. That gives you access to our calendar, which has not only our events, but also events for allied groups. We try to be as open as possible to anybody wanting to put things on our calendar. It gets some of those days get pretty darn crowded. So that's one way. We have a biweekly general meeting, which is a great place to come and see what we're doing, get an update on all of our action team. We've got various programs that we are implementing. There's the 1 Million Rising. There's our civil disobedience trainings. We are looking at some other ways that people can get involved through national and through us. Our Congress Watch team, our State Watch team, any of those teams where you think you have a talent and want to get involved, that's a great place to plug in. And if you have any questions, you can always email us at info@indivisibleavl.org.
Something I wanted to ask you about, and I missed it earlier in the interview, and it has to do with why people, us, kind of succumb and become, I guess, victims of politicians who would have their way in the world. And there's this persistent and, to me, a growing disparity between the haves and have-nots. And it's this disparity that politicians seem to be able to play on to garner support without ever really bringing about any systemic change that would lessen that gap. So citizenry remain unhappy and willing victims to those who would stir unrest and gain followers. And I think about that a lot, and I just wonder, what is the way out of that situation?
It's very, very true. The disparity is greater than it has been since the Gilded Age back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And it was the end of that was the Great Depression. So let's try and avoid that, if you don't mind. And I think a lot of the politicians have had the system rigged in their favor so that they don't have to. They're going to easily win their seats again and again and again without having to address the needs of their constituents. And the constituents start to feel like, you know, what does it matter? I vote and nothing gets better. You know, especially those swing voters that, you know, one time they'll vote for Trump and the next time they'll vote for Biden. And it's like Biden's policies didn't stay in place long enough to actually trickle down far enough to get to those have-nots. And actually, to some degree, they did, but people just aren't always aware of, you know, that child credit, you know, that went away. They're not equating that with the fact that, you know, Joe Biden wanted it to stay, but it was the Republicans. Joe Biden was the president when that went away. Not because he wanted it to go away, but that's because it was the Republicans managed to push that through. And then it's so complicated right now that I think many people, especially working class poor, they don't have the wherewithal and they don't have the time or the energy to do the necessary listening and to it, understand truly what's happening to them and why it's happening to them. And also, I think biases get in the way. This man is a white Christian man, and so he's my tribe, and so I'm going to believe him. And the fact that nothing goes my way, it's like because they're all crooked. I was listening to a farmer, a cherry farmer up in Washington, who is having a horrible year because he can't find anybody to come and pick his cherries. And he was blaming the Democrats for scaring the migrant workers. And I thought that that was just so amusing that, like, he had to twist himself into a knot to justify the fact that the policies of the president he elected were damaging his business, but he wasn't going to see that. He was going to blame the Democrats. And it's like, so which Democrat was that? Because it certainly wasn't me with my little Facebook post of please protect the immigrants, you know, make ICE go away, disband it. You know, my little rants and raves were not the thing that kept your migrants away, because they crossed a desert to come to this country to try and earn a living. And you can't blame that on the Democrats. That's the policies that are in place. And that was the guy you elected. And this man, you know, you got to feasibly think that he's reasonably, you know, knowledgeable. I mean, he owns a business, a big farm. It just astounds me that the people can be that stone-faced, or not stone-faced, that's not the term. They're that willing to be led. And the key to fixing that is increasing the amount of correct information that we put out in such a way that it allows it to be open for people like him. And that's, you know, when we've figured out how to do that, I think we'll be okay. And I don't think we have yet, but to me, that's the key, is being able to open the door to people who are suffering, who are poor, who are maybe limited English speaking, limited English reading, and get the people in there that's going to put the legislation and the regulations onto things like, you know, how about a banner that has to go across the top of Fox and Joe Rogan and all these other things, that the information you're going to hear on this program is not based on facts. It is based on opinion. You know, we have to do that for movies. We have to say whether it's going to have cussing and pornography or nudity or whatever, that has to be on the label. So these programs that are out there have to have a disclaimer that says this is not based on any medical fact. This is not based on any political fact. These are opinions. And if you want to agree with that opinion, that's fine. But just understand that there's not real evidence behind it that says that this is true. And then, you know, that gives people some power to be able to say, well, I like what he says and I like listening to him, but this isn't true. But that's, again, going to take people getting into power and having the guts to say, I'm a one-term senator, whatever, and I'm going to put into place these laws that limit the corruption and limit the greed and limit the misinformation and disinformation for the benefit of those people who would just want the power and not do the service.
And unfortunately, that people that want the power are on both sides of the aisle. We're in need of a new kind of politician, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. The politician, the Democrat Democratic politicians in Washington that are just like, oh, we need to be patient. Oh, we're not going to swing at everything. Oh, we're, you know, well, and that's absolute like bupkis. You know, you need to stand up and start screaming from the mountaintops. And if you don't get elected again, you know, understand that that was your service. You did your service. You did the right thing, and you stood up for what you knew was right. And to bow out because the polls won't, and you won't get your job again. That's cowardice. It's cowardice, and that's their greed too.
So, give us the details again about this event on Monday, September 1st, Labor Day.
We will be meeting at 10:30 in Pack Square for a march and a rally, and it's going to be based on and themed about labor and the focus on standing up for the common man and the common worker, a living wage, and the rights to have your job protected against corporate greed.
You mentioned earlier, although you didn't know a specific date, something else coming up in September. How can people find out more about these different events?
Like I said, you can always go to indivisibleavl.org and click on our events calendar. We have all kinds of different things happening. And as the September 20th minimum date finalizes and we become more solid as to who's working with whom and what we hope to accomplish, those details will be on there. We get a lot of information from a lot of different groups, and it's always a work in progress to see who are we paying attention to and who are we working with and what's the focus of this one. I find myself going, what are we doing? What are we protesting this time? There's a lot going on, and I'm really, really grateful for that. I'm happy that I can't always say exactly what the next event is going to be themed on, because there's three more coming up. And that's what we need to do to stay engaged and active and keeping it to the forefront. You know, I want people going, oh God, not another one. Well, here we go. Got it. You know, I got my sign, because this battle is going to be hard fought and it's going to be long.
Well, it's with a lot of events going on, it's a sign that people are engaged and want to bring about positive change. Well, I want to thank Robin Lively Summers for coming on the show today. She's the president of Indivisible Asheville. Robin, thank you so much for being with us and giving us an update about what Indivisible Asheville is involved with. All the best to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I just so appreciate you giving me this opportunity to share what Indivisible Asheville is doing.
You've been listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next time on A Better World. And we're going out today with The Trap by Wyclef Jean and Mike Donovan.
Critical thinking, keep me in this state of mind.
Second party politics. Get the money out, so we can get along. They got us in a trap. We're caught up in the trap.
Yeah, critical thinking
for critical times. They got us in a trap. We're caught up in the trap.
Yeah, critical thinking.
For critical times, government's not the answer. We need less of that. It's up to the people to take our country back. Cronies own the parties. Corruption's everywhere. Clean it up for the love.
Yeah, vote Donovan for gov.
They got us in a trap. We're caught up in the trap.
Yeah, critical thinking
for critical times.
Yeah, hemp's just a plant. Prohibition is the problem.
but we could change all of that. Yeah, Vodanafin in the autumn.
Individual rights is where it's at. Collective thinking is a cancer. And with liberty, our guide, we can find the answer. Stop the intolerance. Get couples freedom with women.